Francis Ford Coppola's latest film, Tetro, is his second feature in just 2 years after 10 years of silence. And this is the first film that he has done from his own original script since he made The Conversation 35 years ago. He says that it's the kind of film he set out to make as a young man before fame, fortune, and The Godfather sidetracked him. Tetro, which stars Vincent Gallo, Maribel Verdú, Klaus Maria Brandauer, Carmen Maura, and a newcomer named Alden Ehrenreich, opened last Monday at the Landmark Sunshine on East Houston Street. I'm very pleased that it brings five-time Oscar winner Francis Ford Coppola back to the show today. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Thanks for the invitation.
I've read that the origins of Tetro go all the way back to your film school days at UCLA. How many years ago was that?
Well, I mean, that's 1962. And I was, as you said, I was sure that my career was going to be kind of more, maybe I'd make money occasionally making a horror film or something. But what I really dreamt of doing was writing original. I had wanted to be a playwright when I was a theater major, and writing original stories for film and then the screenplay and making personal films.
But you were making horror films for Roger Corman at
that
time.
I was Roger Corman's assistant, and I learned a lot from him. My first original screenplay was The Rain People, which I got to make with Shirley Knight and Jimmy Kahn. And then I wrote The Conversation and wasn't able to get any money to do it. And then finally a project came along, a real job, and I needed the money. And that turned out to be the Godfather, and it sort of changed. You know, I was hit with such success that I didn't... It took me a while to get my bearings.
Although, it's interesting that The Conversation you couldn't make, and yet many people consider it one of your finest films. When it did get made, it won at Cannes.
After Godfather, I was able to make it. But at that time, as I was just kind of looking for things to write about, I wrote about a half a page of something which said Tetro, and I don't know what that title meant or where it came from, and it started with a guy staring into light bulbs with moths fluttering around.
And that's the way this film begins.
And a young sailor comes home looking for a brother, and it was half a page, and that's why you mentioned I had some. But I didn't have the story. I don't know why. Other than that metaphor of the guy obsessed with light bulbs attracted me. And so when I had finished Youth Without Youth and I was on this so-called second career, which I would finance the movie myself, which is what makes it possible for me to do, whatever I might want to do, I didn't quite know. I wanted to make a personal film that was emotional, in the way that Rocco and his brothers had been emotional, and any of Ildia Kazan's films were so beautiful. And I just was thinking of different ideas. I already knew I was going to maybe set something in Argentina, because that's part of the Roger Corman formula for getting a lot of money out of, a lot for your money by going to another country. And I found this little half a page, and I don't know, it just said, gee, that was intriguing. I wonder what that story was going to be about. And I found myself just picking up from that half page and then writing the screenplay.
Although the original... you did know it was going to take place in Detroit, and that's where your family comes from. Buenos Aires, you say, totally for budgetary reasons?
No, not for budget. But the philosophy of these films of the second career is that I choose a country that, firstly, I want to go to, I think would be fun to learn the language and to get to know it, as you do, and also that the exchange rate is favorable, so that my puny dollars can maybe make a movie, but also a country that has a really significant cultural tradition, because if it's a country where there's theater and the tradition of literature, which of course both Argentina and Romania have, that means there's going to be creative people, because I don't take anyone with me. I the entire crew comes from the country where I'm the guest.
Except your cinematographer here and your editor. But also another thing about Buenos Aires is it had a sizable Italian immigrant population. So you could kind of tell an Italian-American story and also make it an Italian-Argentinian story.
Absolutely. That was part of the idea, that Italian families sort of send one son to America, North America, and one son to Argentina. And Argentina is very similar in the impact of the Italian there.
You've also made these last two films with digital technology. It obviously allows you to shoot faster, cheaper, with a smaller crew. And is this something that you began with when you were working with Roger Corman?
No, certainly the electronic cinema didn't exist.
Yeah, but I mean, that he made Quickie movies, and he's been a guest on the show, and he talked about how he liked these young, talented directors, but the most important thing was that they bring in a film for practically nothing.
Definitely. I had the benefit and the privilege to have my early training in that kind of low-budget school of filmmaking, and even then I realized these things I'm learning from Roger, who was able to make films so inexpensively, I could use that to make art films. Just because the method was cheap doesn't mean that the script couldn't be more adventurous and interesting.
You have a little reference to Dementia 13, I thought, in this film, where one of the characters shows up at a party with an axe in his hand.
Definitely. We were joking about that when we did it. Of course, I wanted the axe because he needed a stick to hit the window that later you see. But definitely, that's a little reminder of my early career with Corman. I don't know how many people noticed that you did.
What about shooting digitally? Could you have, if you were making The Godfather today, could you shoot it digitally?
Absolutely. There's a lot of misunderstanding about digital, what it really does, and we could talk a long time about it because politics has it involved itself.
Well, you were promoting it 30 years ago,
definitely.
At an Oscar ceremony, was it?
Yeah.
That?
Yeah, I just kind of spoke out of turn. I was supposed to present the Best Director, and I decided to tell the audience 35 years that the industry was going to be totally changed by basically digital techniques, and all of what I was talking about came true. But, you know, of course, some of the most expensive things about making movies are the same, and we still have to convene all these people and actors and talent, and you have to put them up there, and you need trucks to get around and stuff. So the digital phenomena doesn't so much affect that. But it's true what you say. You can see what you're doing better because you're seeing the final image right there. And you you can work a little faster, although lighting, of course, still takes time. But I think it's a beautiful medium. And I don't know – have you seen the picture?
Yes, of course.
So, I mean –
I wouldn't be talking to you about it if I hadn't seen it.
Excuse me, but I didn't know that you would have guessed it was digital if you
– I would not have guessed it. I've just read that it's digital.
Yeah.
But we talked about digital the last time you were here.
Right.
For Youth Without You.
Well, my only point is that, you know, I think the beauty of photography now has to do with the quality of the lens and the eye of the cinematographer. It doesn't really anymore have to do with how it's recorded. In fact, most movies, as you probably know, are all digital up until they may be shot on film, but they're all converted to digital. And then they're
for editing now.
For editing and color balance, and then they're outputted as film.
But you also shot this in black and white, which is a return to the old days. You mentioned Rocco and his brothers Visconti and Kazan. I know you love On the Waterfront. And when you came along, there were all of the big films, whether it was Godard or Truffaut or Antonioni or Fellini.
Or Kurosawa.
They were all making films in sparkling black and white.
And black and white is something, they understand it in the art market. Well, like you could buy a gorgeous black and white print, you could buy a gorgeous color print of some artist, and you're going to, you know, pay not by whether it's black and white or color, but you're going to pay by who the artist is and then the beauty of the picture. Sometime, I don't know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a very important television executive made the ruling that their company would not pay but half for black and white. And that's what caused that whole controversy about Ted Turner wanting to colorize films, is because there was this rule. It was sort of just a rule that television deemed that black and white was worth half as much. And that has stuck all around the world, so that the consequences, the very few, if any, films are made in black and white, because there's a big financial penalty, because sooner or later the television market is considered one of the ways you get your money back.
Well, you made Rumblefish in black and white with
right.
a little bit of color, and you've done the same thing
right.
here.
And Steven made Schindler's List, and occasionally it happens. But, you know, Steven Spielberg is at the top of his game and of the film industry. So if he says he wants to do it, he does it. Otherwise, just regular filmmakers can't work in black and white. It's a cinema gulag, you know.
So you would have done more in black and white because you did Rumblefish. There's a lot of echoes of earlier films here, the relationship of the brothers in Rumblefish, the multi-generational Italian immigrant family dynamic of The Godfather. You seem to be returning to themes that were important to you way back when.
Well, I think I'm returning to personal filmmaking as much as I can. And there was a period in my career when I owed the Chase Manhattan Bank a lot of money, when I just made a movie every year and I didn't write the script and I didn't write the story, and I was lucky to and grateful to have the job to make that payment. But, you know, I think I love entertainment films and going to regular movies on Friday night, even though I always feel I've seen the movie before. But you know, I think also this part, cinema's big enough to also have personal filmmaking and heartfelt work that the artist is trying to look at his own life and understand better. And so that draws me back to the themes that I find interesting or touching.
My guest is Francis Ford Coppola. His latest film, Tetro, opened last Monday at the Landmark Sunshine on East Houston Street. And you, as I said earlier, you haven't directed a film from your own Well, you've done scripts, but from your own original story since The Conversation, that was 35 years ago, even though you started off wanting to be a playwright. And we're starting to see, actually, any number of filmmakers back on theater. The Coen brothers most recently, of course, is Neil LaBute and others. Would that ever appeal to you, or did you just want to make films based on your own scripts?
You know, I just find cinema, the older I get, more magical and more interesting, in especially in that it's a young art form. It's only 100 years ago. I mean, that's a toddler compared to the theater, and there's just so much to learn about it. And I think even evolved the language of storytelling, which pretty much was invented in the 30s, you know, in the silent era, what we still use as storytelling.
D.W. Griffith pretty much did it all.
Well, and the great filmmakers of Berlin in that period, Pabst and Murnau.
And you say Eisenstein was one of your early
And Eisenstein. So basically we're dealing with a language that was invented by a bunch of pioneers at a time when you could be promiscuous about it, making films. Today it is such a business and such an industry that there are literally rules. There are laws of what you can and cannot experiment
with. But it's so expensive today. I mean, you're working on tighter budgets, partly because you can finance it through your wine winery, and do you still own those resorts?
Yeah, no, I am.
What happens if there's an economic downturn? Well, there is an economic downturn. Are you worrying that you're not going to be able to finance it?
When you have a really big company that is very profitable. I mean, your profits might be down given the ups and downs of the economy, but it's a profitable company, and every year you can rely. I mean, we're like the 14th largest wine company in the country, so I'm very grateful and privileged that I can make films more from just this. Instead of playing golf, I make art films, you know.
Tetro is played by Vincent Gallo, and everyone agrees that he's a fine actor, but he has a rather checkered reputation and wasn't helped by the last movie that he made. And he's playing a rather troubled man. So is this typecasting?
Well, I didn't know. I knew that there was a controversial fellow named Vincent Gallo who was an actor and a filmmaker, but I didn't know much about him. And when I saw his film that he made, Buffalo 66, I was very pleasantly surprised. And everyone said, no, don't hire him. He's just trouble. And But I invited him to spend a few days with me in Buenos Aires, and he came. And when I saw him, I felt he was right for this character. And I have to say, he was a pleasure to work with. He's very intelligent. He has a screwy sense of humor, maybe that could get some misunderstood. But, I mean, very intelligent people usually have a kind of special sense of humor. I mean, Robin Williams' humor is a sign of his brilliance as just an intelligent person. And I have to say that Vincent got there and was hardworking and a pleasure, worked wonderfully with the young boy. And
Alden Ehrenreich, who is a real discovery.
He is totally. But I could only say good things about Vincent and Alden as well. Alden is clearly going to have an enormous career.
Because this film is about a rivalry between men in an artistic family, many people have suggested that there's an autobiographical component to it, paralleling the story of your father and your uncle, who were both composers, and even, to some degree, the story of how Nicolas Cage came to be a member of your family.
Well, I mean, I think when you want to write a film that really is going to make you weep, you tend to look back at what was moving in your life, and I did that. I knew that going back there, obviously I had done Rumblefish, and yet even though that dealt with a kid who idolized his brother, clearly I wasn't finished with that story, and I wanted to know more about it. And I, this time, took more unabashedly from my own family. And even though the story is fiction, which is why it's not autobiographical, nothing like this ever happened, yet when I wrote it, the flesh on it came from my own feelings.
Well, you say that you did the same thing when you were working on The Godfather, even though there were no mobsters in your family.
Well, in the end, what else can you do as a writer? I mean, you can't just write. You put in what you feel and what you know, and that's what I did in both cases, except this was more terrifying because, you know, there were things in the story that I hadn't really looked at honestly. And making the film, I did.
The reviews for Youth Without Youth and Tetro have been mixed. Does that concern you?
Gosh, the reviews for Tetro are spectacular. I don't know why you have the impression they're
well,
mixed.
Well, I've read both. I've read this is a great film, this is a return to the glory days, and then some other people have felt differently.
Yeah, but
I guess that's the way reviewers are.
Yeah, but given that this is Monday, I have to tell you that you know, you always get a bad review from Variety, so I'm sure you read Variety because that was our bad review. But I got a bad review from Variety on The Godfather, if you care to look at it. No, our reviews have been spectacular. Wait till you see Friday when we unveil all that there are. And, you know, there's always, especially when a film is unusual, there are always some naysayers because they don't know what kind of animal it is. But, no, the reaction has been fantastic. I'm very, very happy, and I anticipate a much more reception than Youth Without Youth did.
Well, you were working on this while you were directing Youth Without Youth, so do you have another film already in the works?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, going to give me any kind of clue?
It's a kind of a film. It's very personal. It's something but it's also a type of film I've always wanted to do because in the movie Hollywood, you get typecast. If you make a successful gangster picture, you can spend your whole life doing it. It's a type of film I've always wanted to make, and also about certain
black and white.
No, it'll be color. It'll be a much bigger film.
Francis Ford Coppola's latest film is called Tetro, and it stars Vincent Gallo, Mirabel Verdú, Klaus Maria Brandauer, amazing performance, Carmen Maura, and a newcomer named Alden Ehrenreich. It opened last Monday at the Landmark Sunshine on East Houston Street, and it has been my great pleasure to speak with Mr. Coppola again today on the show.
And my pleasure to have such an interesting conversation. Thank you.